Welcome to the Crew MPD podcast with Katie Johnson and Michelle Davis. We love that the Lord commanded that those who proclaim the gospel should get their living by the gospel. We are driven to equip and inspire Christian workers to be Christ-centered, fully funded, and financially faithful, so that missionary staff can come alongside all people to help them to know Jesus. This process is more widely known as Ministry Partner Development, or MPD for short.
Hey guys, we are so excited today to be joined by Tong Pham. Tong, thanks for joining us today on the Crew MPD podcast.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah. Hey, you're here as part of our series about I Love MPD, and you love MPD. For 100% sure. Yes, I'm very glad for that. We're excited to like hear more about that today. Could you first, though, start us off by telling us more just about who you are, where you're from, you know, those basic bio things that help people just know who we're talking to today.
For sure. I was born and raised in Vietnam, and then my family escaped from Vietnam in 81 and then spent 15 days out at sea, 11 months at a refugee camp in Hong Kong, and then was sent to America, the Seattle area of all places. Went away to college at Washington State in the fall of 96, and that's where I came to faith. Pearl Harbor Day, 1996, the fall of my freshman year there. At 5:05 p.m. in the basement of a duplex home on Larry Street. So I've been a Christian for just a little over 25 years.
Wow. That is amazing. Amazing. Just like, so I'm curious, you come to faith in your freshman year of college.
Yeah.
What, you know, how did your family respond to that? Like, where are they at with their spiritual journey?
Yeah, I remember my mother and father saying, if we were in Vietnam, we would disown you. But I think they understood the reality of being in America, that there's different directions. And so they were okay with it until I came on staff. Then they said that you are basically one step better than a thief. You're a beggar. So being on staff with Crew, I told them that I had to raise support, obviously Ministry Partner Development. And so my mother sat me in the living room and said, well, you're just one step better than a thief, really. You're a beggar in our own language, of course, our native language. And then the second thing to follow up, she said, Tong, my name. And she said, who is going to stay married to you if you don't ever make enough money? So then the mic dropped, of course, and that was kind of the end of that tearful conversation from my mom's side. So,
okay, so I need to pause for a second here because we're starting out this episode like Tong, here he is, he loves MPD, and then this, you know, the setup, the background of your story, surviving 15 days at sea as an infant and your family moving here against all these odds, and then you come to Christ and your family's less than excited about that, would have considered disowning you. And then you go join staff and your mom, like what you just said, you know, one step better than a thief. That is, those words are hard to swallow.
Yeah.
You know,
felt like I can imagine myself sitting there right now in the living room, like it was yesterday as I'm hearing that, as I'm repeating that to you.
Yeah. Tell me more about, in that moment, what was happening for you internally and spiritually as you're processing, hearing these really heavy and difficult words from your mom? What's going on in for you in your inner world?
Well, I knew that I was called to be on staff with Crew. That's one. Mm-hmm. And two, there was absolutely no way out except to walk through the challenge of thinking about, at the time, raising support, or today we call it MPD. But I knew that that was the process that I was going to walk through. And I didn't see any other end but to succeed in it. So naively, I thought, you know what, I'm going to make this happen. So that's what I did.
Wow. Okay. So you're then, I think that says a lot about your relationship with God and about things that the Lord had done in your life to call you on staff and to, to call you to himself, first of all, and like how solid your faith must have been at that point built up to be that, to then like obey despite those kinds of odds and those kinds of, that's really difficult. So, take us the next step in, like, tell us then what it was like, you know, to go to your first MPD training, learning more about this organization. What was that like for you?
Yeah, training was really different. You know, we were in Orlando, we were in Daytona Beach through new staff training. And then there was like a week long process of fund development, raising your support. And I thought, man, this is really challenging. But I just knew that I loved relationships and I loved people. And I remember when I was a student, my director used to tell me, Tong, you will love MPD. And I kept thinking, you are crazy. Who loves asking for money? And then I did it and I realized, you know what? I actually love this process. And so I really enjoyed the MPD process as I left Orlando or Daytona. I came back to raise money to come back to campus at Montana State University. My first actual appointment was with people that I didn't even know. I was waiting tables at my parents' own restaurant. And it happened to be this couple sitting out at the middle table. I can still vividly remember this. And I went to them as I heard them talking about the Bible and the gospel. I said, hey, this is a weird ask, but would you consider meeting with me? I'm a part of Campus Crusade for Christ. Would you consider meeting with me to hear what I'm doing? And would you consider partnering with what I do? So that was my first appointment. But if you said, Tong, do you have people to talk to? I had a list of like 300 names to start off, and I couldn't ask any of them. So I went with this brand new couple sitting at the table, and they ended up supporting me. That's what launched me into real MPD. Like, so I took like 7-ish weeks to raise the rest of my support, basically. And two of it really was on vacation in Arizona for fun. So,
okay, I just have to say, because this is audio, that if you're listening, you can't see how big my eyes and Katie's eyes are right now. Like, and my eyes are huge and a little tearing up. This is incredible. I didn't know this about your story going into this question. Like, so you whacked up to people you didn't know. Yeah. At your parents' restaurant. So yeah. I'm guessing they were there. They had told you that they were – you know, not cool with what you're doing, you know? And so on their turf, like, okay, how did your parents respond to seeing you ask some of their customers? And then how did they respond to hearing that those customers were excited to join your team? First question, I have a million more, but let's start there.
they said, would you just let people eat their meal? And I kept thinking, they really enjoy conversation. And so like people from the church locally in that area, I went to a church like two blocks away from there after I came to faith and I was connected there. They would come over to the restaurant and just would, my parents had never met these people. They would just rave about who I was as a person and that they were so excited about what I do. And so literally people would come to meet with me there just to tell them how excited I was. And so, yeah, I raised a lot of support at the restaurant. So.
Oh my gosh. So now my mouth has dropped open. Eyes big, mouth dropped open. So that is, so I think that one of the things that makes me think about is how, you know, God was calling, like leading these people to your ministry partner team. And then really immediately they were partnering with you in a ministry to your parents.
Yes. They were praying for my parents all along the way. Yes. So.
Okay, so I'm curious, like going back to the couple that you didn't know, when you went up to them, how did they I know they joined your team, but was their initial response, were they caught off guard? How did they respond? I think most people listening would probably be terrified to do that. Mm-hmm. And so I just want to hear, like, what were their responses?
Yeah, I'm overwhelmed even that you'd ask that question because I've had so many of those moments and those experiences. I don't know what they were feeling, but I remember them saying, of course, we would love to. And I thought, this is the weirdest thing. And I can tell you right now, other couples that are still on my support team that still support us that were at the restaurant randomly for those 3, 4, 5 years that I could kind of occasionally come back, and they're still on my team today. I have a guy who gives us sometimes as much as like $12,000 to $13,000 annually, but out of the blue, he has never received one newsletter because he doesn't want to be tracked or anything. He just will. In fact, this December, I think he gave like 1500 or 2400. I don't even know, because he'll send three checks in at like 700, 800. So just random numbers. But like one year, he just dropped 4,000 in one month. And then every month, he would drop another $700 or $800. It was just the weirdest thing. And so, and then we have donors right now that I met at a coffee shop that would give, would say to me like, hey, Tong, I'd love to give you up to $1,000 a month. But for as many months as you need short, I'll give it to you. So I've had these weird moments at coffee shops or just place spaces where I'm just really talking to people about what the Lord is doing or how God is working, or I see people reading the Bible or whatever. And I get in this conversation, and then they all of a sudden ask me what I do. And then I share like no more than a few minutes, and then they'll be like, well, I want to hear more. And then I'll share, and then they're on my support team, which is really random. So even to this day, now being on staff for almost 20 years, I've never gone through my contact list or quote unquote, your list of people that you need to talk to for support, you know, or whatever. So yeah. I don't know. I think the highlight of to me, when I think about Ministry Partner Develop It, is just the crazy stories that God is able to do in that person's life. And so when I think about money, I never think about money. When I think about MPD, I never think about money. I think about like, oh my gosh, I get to hear about their life. I get to expand their scope of God's vision in their world. I get to expand and allow them to see how God is at work in the rest of the world and the rest of the body of Christ. And then I get to ask them some weird thing like, hey, would you pray for me? And then would you partner with me to give to me? But that's not even the most difficult question. The question I generally have the hardest time asking is, would you consider thinking through people with me to partner with me? And so honestly, like every conversation, those are the three questions I ask. Would you partner? Would you pray with me for me and for the ministry? And then would you consider partnering with me in some amount? And so this has been a really controversial thing that I've taught a lot of people is I've hardly ever asked anybody for an amount. I just don't, because I just really believe that God somehow miraculously speaks into their heart to the amount that they want to give. They might even ask me, well, what did the average person give? And I've said it to some people. I've said, well, some people give as little as $10, which I have on my team, which is awesome. And then I've had people that give me $1,500 a month. So there's your range. If you'd like to look at a range, there's my range, $10 to $1,500 a month. So
that's amazing. Did you, in that moment, because you said you were nervous about contacting the list you had. You had a list.
Yes.
But you decided to go up to random strangers. Yes. And in that moment, did you hesitate at all? I would assume it was the Holy Spirit nudging you to do that, but yeah, what were your emotions in that moment?
Yes. I had a really difficult time the first few days coming back from staff training. Mm-hmm. I was nervous. I kept thinking, I have so many people and I care about my relationship so much more than money. I just had these people that I knew that loved me, but it's weird to ask for money. It's kind of one of those sticky things, you know? And so for like 3 or 4 days, literally, I was in paralysis. And so I was working at the restaurant, and that's when I just said, forget it, God. I got to make one move. If I can make this one scary move, I think it'll do something. So I did. I made that move, and they said they would love to meet with me. And then I think literally the rest is history. Like, I loved it probably from that point on at the restaurant, to the point where, like, that is the highlight of my whole staff career. As much as I love staff, as I was on campus for 17 years, I loved it. But I would say that the treasure and the greatest, well, greatest is a strong word, but one of the greatest gifts of being on staff with crew is doing MPD work, really. Like being able to care for your ministry partners in a way that you hear about their life, the good, the bad, and the tragedy of it. And then they get to come alongside and bless you in ways that then opens your eyes and you're kind of just in awe of like how big he is, that he would give you this amount. I mean, I just had someone put $15,000 into my staff account that I barely even know. You know, this last December, I haven't done an end of the year ask for probably like 15 years. And this last December was my largest end of the year ever. And you know, it's like more than three times what I raise on a normal monthly basis. And so that gives you kind of an idea of like, God's so kind and he's so gracious and he doesn't really care about money because he's the one that grows it. And so as a result of him growing money, like, why does he really even care about how much money? He's just going to give what you need. And so clearly he knows that I need it. So there you go.
Well, and I can't help but think, in light of like how your parents first responded to MPD and even your mom saying, who's going to stay married to you? Yeah. I mean, you are married and you have four kids. Your wife stayed married to you and you have four kids and, you know, she's on staff too, right? Yeah. And so, do you get to talk about these, like truly miraculous, amazing things that God is doing your MPD? Do you get to talk about those things with your parents and what are their responses to what is now going on 20 years of really their expectations? Their expectations were not met. You know, they expected this to fail, but you know, God's really done some amazing things here.
Yeah. Don't quote me on it, but I just think of even this last year, I think we raised like $150,000. The Lord is so kind. My parents still wonder how I do it. So they'll ask me, my dad will ask me all the time, like, wait, you just raised 20 some? You just raised 15? I mean, they're just blown away by the number because in my almost 20 years on staff, I've never had the exact same number ever. You know, like 1 month is like 9,000, the other's 12,000. When I was single on staff, it was like, you know, 4,000 or 3,000 or whatever it was. It was small back in 2003. But now it's like almost always five digits, obviously some number. My dad is blown away that God would like through people give this much money. So when I tell my dad like the raw numbers annually what I raise, my dad is blown away by that. My parents are blown away by that. So yes, so is my brother and sister. So.
Well, I mean, yeah, I'm blown away. And this is like my world and my profession and I am blown away. So I imagine that, I'm glad that you get to share that with them and that like you keep them in the loop about like, cause what you're doing there, I think, is you're truly giving God praise and glory, you know, for what he's doing in your MPD and you're telling your family about that. You know, I think that's significant. Okay. So one thing that I was wondering related back to what you said, when you said that your campus director or your, the crew staff person who, you know, was in some way influential in you joining staff told you that you would love MPD. Okay. I'm wondering like, if you've reflected on that, like what was it that cause you do. And like, you have seen some amazing things happen. My hunch is, this is probably how you love people and talk to people and care about people in all areas of your life, not just in when you're raising support. So like probably this is how you approach like evangelism and discipleship and friendship. Yeah.
Yes. He said, Tong, you can talk to an old lady at a bus stop about curtains or you can talk to someone about something gospel related. And so it's like, it's how do you enter into someone's world where they can talk about themselves and their life and bleed all the junk and all the good and all the bad and all the ugly. And then I just enter in and talk about how God meets you in that space. And his design was that you would meet with him in a way that is drastically different than your kind of crappy experience. And so like, I just look for ways to navigate my life in and through people. So honestly, that is probably why I love MPD. It's not even because of the money, honestly, like money's fine. Like it's all fine. But like, I'm looking for ways that I can kind of just talk to people about how big God is and like the reality of how big God is in their person, in that person's life. So they can actually transform their own little world, just like I'm transforming my own little world, just like all of us are transforming our little world, wherever we live. And so, yeah, I think that was what he saw. He just saw that I could just sit there and talk to anyone and everyone, you know? So like one story, really quick in 30 seconds, I was at some guy's house in Seattle when I was a student raising support for the campus. And I was just sharing the story and I ended up walking to his refrigerator. I stood at his refrigerator and he said to me, Tong, I will support you in whatever you do with your life. And so literally I walked back, I came back to Washington State University and I was haunted because I was about to graduate. And then the next thing I found out is that this idea popped in my head. I'm going to stay in school longer. I'm going to go ahead and postpone my graduation, stay in school, move back into an all-freshman dorm as a fifth-year senior, and then ended up doing it as a sixth-year senior at Washington State University, and then do ministry to a bunch of freshmen, 18, 19-year-old. And he was a part, an instrumental part of that, as he said that to me in his refrigerator, and then he ended up writing a check for me to pay for some of my tuition. So, yeah, he was instrumental even in that. So, as a student, I saw God's hand in kind of writing parts of my story. So I didn't come on staff in 2001 like I should have. I postponed it and came on staff in January of 2003 because of one man's blessing and provision for me to stay in school and be a student to do ministry to another student. So the way I said it was, I wanted to milk my studentship as dry as I could, and then I can always be on staff later. So
yeah,
I came on staff a year and a half, 2 years later.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. Do you know what your Strength Finders top five is? Because I feel like I have a hunch of what some of them might be.
I do. 10 years ago, it was competition was my number one strength, and I hated it. But I'll tell you what it was a couple of years ago. My number one strength is futuristic, and then it's strategic, and then three is competition, four is belief, and fifth is self-assurance.
Interesting. Okay, because I actually would have guessed it wrong, but I think, well, I would have guessed woo because of how winsome you are in conversations, but I can see how you, with those, like the belief and the strategic and the, like all these things, you win over like-minded people with all of that. That's interesting. Someday I want to do a series on like how our strengths or Enneagram or I don't know, some of those types of things impact MPD. So this is just a hunch I've been asking people as we talk about it.
Every person has always said that they thought woo was my number one. And I think woo is probably not my number one. This is off tangent, but it's because I can be very like, okay, this is the reality. And so people don't like that. And I think bucking up against reality can kind of push woo away a little bit, because I don't want to win every conversation. I want to be right more than I want to be winsome. So
interesting. That's really interesting. Well, regardless, I'm glad you're getting there with all these, with the strengths that God has given you. And I think that that's something I'm like in this conversation, I just keep thinking like God has wired you for what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And so it makes sense to me that like you now you're not working on campus. You now work in fund development.
Yes.
And so crew is a little, so in crew, like we have ministry partner development. That's where Katie and I work. And we in MPD are working primarily to help our staff be equipped and trained and resourced and coached to raise their individual support, which is what we're talking about here in Tong's journey, raises individual support. But what Tong is doing is another step of how income comes into crew to fund our ministry. And that's fund development, where he is raising. Well, why don't you just define for us? Okay.
Yeah.
Fund development. What is fund development and what do you get to do?
Okay. So long term, I would love to cultivate relationships and partners where they would engage the campus or whatever department in crew we do, and to be able to say, I want to partner with you. I want to give $100,000 for this project, or I want to give $250,000 for this project, or I want to give $1 million over a 3-year period for this project. And so I work in city now. I just transferred to city this last couple months. And so I'm really excited about that. But I just think about how I want to kind of recreate and kind of change the organization in city to be able to be self-sustaining. Like, how do we not get funding from kind of the mothership? But the reality is, how do we raise money with partners who want to kind of lock arms with us to do what we do in city and reach the United States and the world, but they get to kind of have hands-on experience in it. And they'll say, you know what? I want to give. I want to give $100,000 towards this project. So let's say we start a crew city in Seattle or LA or any of those things, even more so. Like, let's move people to these cities. Let's raise some money to do that. And so so it's a little bit more organizationally versus personally. But my heart is personal. Like, I want every person on staff with crew to love and enjoy the partnership development process, just because I think it's such a big deal. And then it also allows you to have total freedom to be able to kind of live the life that God, I think, intends for us on staff to have, which is freedom and flexibility. Because you're not getting rich. Let's be honest. Us folks on staff, we're not getting rich.
No, but we're not.
There'd be something really nice when you don't have to say no. For me, having four kids, I don't have to say no to my children for playing sports because we don't have enough resources. I'd want to be able to say yes to those things. And I think often staff say no to the wrong things and say yes to the wrong things because of our lack of ministry partner development. And so I would love for all of our staff in Crew to have a staff account balance that's healthy, that's God, that's faith-filled, that's not hoarding, but it's also not on a scarcity mentality, but on a place where they feel like this is what the Lord's asked me to do. And it gives me totally clear mental real estate wise, like my mind is free to do what God has asked me to do on staff with Crew. So that's my hope with MPD.
Okay. Tong, I'm curious to hear more your thoughts on cultivating relationships with ministry partners, which is something that you've talked about a lot so far, about how important that is, about how much you care about that. And specifically, why do you think it's so important to think about cultivating a relationship with ministry partners in the way that you do?
Yeah, I think you cannot pay enough people to pray for what you do. Like when I walked on campus, I know that literally 75 people that support us or 100 people that support us and 200 people that receive our letters are praying for us regularly. Some are going to say, I pray for you every single day. Some are going to say, I pray for you really regularly. But there's something about that that's like magical. I know it seems a little mystical to say that, but there's something beautiful about ministry partners. You know that these people are praying for what you do. So literally when I walk on the campus or I walk wherever I walk, I realize that there's invisible people around me all the time, praying for me, thinking about me, protecting me, caring for me. And then the Lord is behind all of this work. And I'm convinced because people are praying for me, I know I'm going to walk in the good things that God has prepared beforehand, that I might do those things and I might walk in those things. And I just need that. So I think that's a part of the partnership that I explain to them. And then the reality is I tell them I will never get to do the things that I get to do and experience the things I get to experience if you don't partner with me in this way. So really, it's like you and I locking arms, walking on campus. You just happen to be not here. You happen to be sitting 2,000 miles away, praying for me, thinking about me, and then I share to you what happened, and you get to enjoy the part of that, kind of the, in our own language, the ministry success that happens in there, or the life change that happens. So that's why we need to cultivate ministry partners. It's not because of really the money. Because realistically, one guy can write you a check and be done for the rest of your stinking life. But you don't want one guy writing you $10 million to be done for the rest of your life. You want like hundreds upon hundreds of people praying for you, rallying behind you, writing you a note when you're having a bad day, or they write you a Christmas card and you open it up and you see all these things and their stories and their kids. And so you get to follow their journey all along the way also. And I think that to me is probably the most unique thing that we get to do on staff as we raise support. So.
What does it look like, or what would you tell someone who has a hard time with talking, like keeping up with people? And so someone who's not wired quite like you, and maybe they just don't naturally want to connect with all these people all the time. And so what can cultivation look like for them?
Yeah. I think it can be really overwhelming. I understand as a listener, it can be really overwhelming to listen to me talk about this because it feels like, gosh, I'm not doing that. But I want you to hear that it does. It just takes like 15 minutes, you know, today, 30 minutes tomorrow. But it's just learning to put in your schedule, if you're on campus, to put each week like 2 to 3 hours if your support's really good, like a couple hours a week of writing letters or sending a text message for their birthday or Thanksgiving and Christmas. Like, I'll be honest, like during Thanksgiving and Christmas, my wife's like, get off the phone. And I'm like, well, I'm just sending my friends a message about Christmas, and I try to personalize it, you know, so I put their name in there. But I'll send like 75 to 100 messages every holiday, just because I think it's so crucial to care for your partners that way, because they're thinking about it, they're working really hard each week. And so for someone that's overwhelmed, I would just put tiny little blocks. Like if you're on a road trip to a winter conference and you got 4 hours, like spend 15 minutes of it making a phone call to someone that you haven't caught up for a long time and you're just thinking about them. So you want to pray for them and then you call them and let them know. And so I think it's just doing little things. And then throughout the year, eventually you'll kind of get to all of your partners. And so,
yeah.
But it's bite size.
Yeah, I think that's a really, really good advice for people. Even if you naturally love connecting with people, taking things in bite-sized chunks instead of thinking of all, you know, 100, 150 partners at once feels more doable, especially in the middle of what might be already a busy week doing ministry. I have another question. It's not listed here, so, but I'm just curious. You seem like, I mean, you love MPD. That's what this is about. So how have your kids responded to as they watch you raise support? What does that look like? And how do you talk to your kids about raising support?
Yeah, our kids are crew babies. And so the reality is they were raised up in crew. But you know what they love? They love meeting students. They love meeting our partners. Like, our partners send them Christmas gifts, send them birthday cards. They'll send them like a video of them singing happy birthday to them. So it's like that. We just remind them, like, that's a part of what dad does. And you guys are getting to see some of that play out. I mean, for Christmas, honestly, we give them less gifts than our ministry partners combined. You know, like their birthdays and their things. I mean, they get more money than, like, I get cash-wise. You know, they get, like, $10 here and $20 here. And so they receive and reap the benefits of all of it. And I think part of it is our kids have, if I'm just totally honest, I think they see staff life as a joke. Like, in, like, oh, my gosh, it's so fun and so easy. We seem to be able to do everything we need to do, you know? And so our job is to kind of temper that and couch that and help them understand that it's a part of our work. Anyone we intersect with and cross, we want to influence and care for, but also allow them to care and influence us. It's a two-way street. And so,
yeah.
So our kids have reaped the benefits of our partners. Like, I can't even tell you. I can't even tell you. Yeah. They love it. So,
That's amazing. So going back, I mean, we've mentioned that you're married. You mentioned that your parents said at the very beginning, you know, who is even going to stay married to you? Can we just hear a little bit of your story of how you met your wife?
Yes.
Oh, fun. Yes.
Yes.
I was probably going through the darkest season of my life, honestly, on staff. And I was an arrogant, obnoxious new staff. And at Montana State University. And I walked through some morality issues in my own heart and my own life. And so when I was going to Boise State for 1 year, meeting with this director who would kind of shepherd my heart and my life, and he just said, Tom, I this is what I want to do. I'm willing to take you, to disciple you, and shepherd you, and carry you, care for you. And his exact words were, Tom, I would be stupid not to invest in your life. And so, again, that feeds into a lot of the ego that is me. But I think the Lord was kind to me. And then during that season, that's when I met Jen at Boise State University. She was an intern there. Mm-hmm. And so over time, like, I got to know her, and she was, like, very different than what I had always dated. But I just really enjoyed who she was, and I just thought, she's really neat, you know? And so I got to know her over that time. And then I think we were friends for, like, almost a year. And then I asked her to date me, and we dated for, like, 8 months. And then I asked her to marry me, and then 8 months later, we were married in Memorial Day weekend of 2008. So, yeah, May 24th, 2008. So we've been married almost 14 years this coming May. And then we have an almost five-year-old, and then we have a seven-year-old that turns seven January 1st, and then Elijah, our boy, our only boy, just turned nine, and then we have a girl that turned a day before our anniversary, May 23rd. She's 11, so... Basically, oh, five, gosh. 7, 9, 11-year-old.
Yeah. Sorry, Michelle. I was just going to say, how have your parents reacted since it's been 20 years? So they reacted that way when you first joined staff. And now you've raised support for 20 years. They know numbers. You got married to someone who is also on staff and raising support now as a family. And so has their view of MPD changed beyond just being amazed at the numbers? And how did they feel about you both being on staff as a family?
Yeah. Honestly, I don't think things have changed. Like we might make the least amount of money still in my family. Mm-hmm. And for my parents, that's a really big deal. And so I don't think that's changed, but I will say this, my parents have a much greater affection for Jen, my wife, and our kids, for good or for worse, than even my brother and sister. I know that sounds horrible to have to hear that on a podcast, but my parents, I think just because of the circumstances, just love us and care for us and are beginning to really see something really different. I don't think they see money any differently, but I do think that they care for us differently because we make a little bit less. And so I've always said I'm hoping that my oldest daughter will lead my mom and my dad to Christ. Mm-hmm. And so I think when she was like 4 or 5, she would tell my mom, "Hey, Grandma, will you just say God?" And so my mom would say, "Oh, God," you know. So I'm hoping that my oldest daughter, Emma, will share the gospel with my mom and dad and that they'll come to know Christ sometime in the near future.
I love that. I love the boldness of kids so much.
Yeah.
It was at Thanksgiving. Our 4-year-old did prayer before dinner, and I have some family members that don't know the Lord. And in his prayer, he was like, "Thank you, Jesus, for dying on the cross for our sins." And I was like, "Yes, good job." Awesome. And so I just love that. I love that. Kids are so bold, and how cool would that be to have your kids lead your parents to Jesus?
Yeah, I would trade everything in the world for them to come to faith.
Well, we will, I will be definitely praying for that for you. And I think the Lord, who can do immeasurably more than we could ever ask or imagine, and you've seen that in so many ways in your ministry. I know firsthand, like my dad just recently came to faith in Christ after years of thinking I was crazy and impeding and stuff like that. So I will continue to pray for that for you too.
Thank you.
Yeah. Tong, thank you so much. This has been such a great conversation. I feel so encouraged just and inspired by your story and by your incredible faith in God. And so thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for listening to the Crew MPD podcast. Please help others find our show by liking, sharing, and rating us on Apple iTunes and wherever you listen to podcasts. You can find us on social media by searching for The Crew MPD Podcast. Check out the show notes for more information, including the various resources we mentioned in this episode. Till next time, we encourage you to be faithful and full of faith in all things, especially in MPD.